My name is Laura, and this is my story. My earliest childhood memory is actually sitting on the couch talking to a lady from state because somebody had turned in my parents for child abuse or neglect. And so answering her questions. This created a lot of mistrust in our family for everyone because my parents didn't know who turned them in. And my entire life, I've been raised in an environment where people didn't trust people. I was raised in a very religious culture. I used to tell people I was raised half Amish because it made it very easy to explain why I didn't know much about culture and there were so many gaping holes in my knowledge. We were taught that a lot of things were evil, from sports to Amazing Grace. And we had, in spite of all that, we didn't really believe we were God's chosen people. So we believed God was a God of hate and not love, that whether you went to heaven or hell was all arbitrary. It had nothing to do with what you believed or how good you were in life. So everything, all the legalism that persisted in our culture, and there was a lot of it, existed because we believed there were different levels of eternal torment. So if you were at least really good on earth, that did affect how hot you would burn in hell. I was actually sexually abused by 4 different males growing up. And because of what we were taught regarding God, it was a very depressing culture anyway. By the time I was 16 or 17, I was suicidal. I used to cry myself asleep at night. And because I guess everybody in the house was dealing with a lot of pain themselves, nobody actually reached out to me and asked me what was wrong. Actually, some of them told me to shut up. So when I was 18, I lost hope of finding hope where I was, and I decided to go to college. And this was a culturally unacceptable decision for a woman because women were not supposed to work outside of the home or go to school. So I lost all the relationships I had in my childhood at that time. I was still suicidal in the spring semester of my sophomore year of college. I read The Purpose-Driven Life, and on day 7, I gave my life to Christ. It was over 7 years later that I moved to New Jersey, and a lot had happened in those 7 years. I had spent a lot of time in God's Word actually learning what He said instead of what people told me He had said. But I had also made a lot of bad decisions. So I have always felt for many years like a call in my life to go into full-time ministry and to serve God in that capacity. And so I spent a couple years running away from that and doing my own thing because I would do that later. I ended up messing up badly enough that I was pretty sure God had given up on that plan for me. And when I came to New Jersey, I decided to start doing things right, but it wasn't so much that I could serve God and be used by Him. It was so that I could quit being miserable. So in my first month at Hoboken Grace, I met the pastor and joined a dinner group and joined a ministry and became a member. A couple months later, Celebrate Recovery started, and I didn't really want to go, but God convinced me to. So I went through the 12 steps for the first time, and during that time, I admitted for the first time in my life to anyone except for my grandma, my issues with pornography, same-sex attraction, and alcohol. And that just really helped because the devil was no longer able to tell me that if people really knew who I was, they wouldn't love me and I wouldn't be able to serve. I've been in New Jersey like over 2 years now. And within the last 4 to 6 weeks, I've actually started to let down my guard in dinner group for the first time and be myself and laugh and joke and have my own sense of humor. But what I'm really looking forward to as I go through these steps the third time is becoming that person everywhere, not just in dinner group. God has changed me from somebody who ran away from every relationship and someone who has lived in 4 states as a permanent resident in 1 calendar year to someone who actually is having fun and instead of, like, it wasn't my gut reaction to run, instead it was my gut reaction to come back. So it's that the gut reaction was changed, and I don't have to fight that anymore of just wanting to run away from everyone.
What a story. Over the past couple months, I've had the opportunity to be able to actually spend about an hour a week with Laura and get to hear more of her story as she's stepping into leadership inside of Celebrate Recovery. And she talked about how she's part of Celebrate Recovery, but over the last month, she's actually begun leading Celebrate Recovery, and she's taking that and running with it, and it's really, really incredible to see. And I know as we listen to that story, for some of you, it's going to hit you pretty hard because you're feeling, and you are where she talks about being, and you're going through some of those things that she talks about going through. And I hope that as you hear her story, not only do you hear her saying that that's where she was, but I hope you hear the hope, that you can hear how she has encountered Jesus Christ, and because of that, how she's beginning to truly celebrate recovery. And if you don't know what Celebrate Recovery is and how you can be a part of that and work through those hurts, habits, and hang-ups with other people, you can do that afterwards. I'll be down here in front. I'd love to share with you more about it. You can go to our connection points. They'll give you information about when that happens and how you can be a part of that. But I hope that you see the beauty of how God has moved her out of that and is now beginning to use her in really, really powerful ways inside of our family. And I'm really excited to see how he's going to use her moving forward as well. And every week we take time as we're going through our service to be able to hear different people's stories, to be able to celebrate what God's doing, and to be able to celebrate the beauty of how he's moving in all of our lives, even though we're coming from so many different places, and how he has pursued us, that we're not just, we don't just get up here and say, hey, we believe God pursues us, but that we've seen over and over and over again how God pursues us and how he's bringing us back to him and bringing us back to this relationship as a father in our lives. And if you haven't been with us for the past few weeks, right now we're in the middle of this conversation called Life Coach. And we're talking about the beauty of the relationship that God has with us. That God doesn't just invite us into a relationship where he's our God and we are his people, but that he says, no, 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 I want it to be more intimate than that. I want to be your dad. And I know for some of us, we struggle with that because we had terrible dads. And so for some of you, you hear that and you don't really know what to do with it. But he's coming to you and saying, listen, I want to show you what a good dad looks like. I want to show you what it means to truly have a loving father. And so he invites us into that with him. And as a result of that, there's all sorts of things that we experience. We experience his love and just his unconditional outpouring of love. We experience his care and his provision and how he takes care of us and provides for us. But then in addition to that, we also experience this side of him that we've been celebrating for the last couple weeks. And that is this side of him where he comes alongside of us and says, listen, because I'm your dad, this is what I want to do. I want to coach you in how to live well. I want to coach you in how to be able to navigate the decisions ahead of you. And I want to train you up so that you can succeed in the future and that you can engage this mission with everything that you have and you can do it well. And so for the last couple of weeks, we've been looking at how he does that. We looked at the struggle that we have with our tongue and the words that we say. And we looked at this sense of discontentment that sometimes can destroy us and take us in directions we never intended to go. And then last week, we looked at this drive for consumption. And we looked at how God, although he doesn't necessarily step into every area of our life and do this, that how he in specific areas will step in and say, hey, listen, you need to pay attention to this. You need to pay attention to this because this is a really, really important area of life. This is a really dangerous moment. This is a really destructive situation. And so while often he shares with us principles that can be used across multiple situations, there are certain times where he steps in and says, okay, we need to get really specific here because this one you really need to pay attention to. And so we've been seeing how he He does that, and how it's usually those moments that are most dangerous, or those moments in which we tend to struggle the most. And I think sometimes when we talk about struggling, or when we talk about moments where we're susceptible or where we're weak, we often think about, or we often talk about, moments of pain. Or we often talk about moments of loss, or we often talk about moments where we're in situations where everything's beginning to fall apart. And the truth is that God talks to us a lot about how to deal with those times in our life where we're going through things that are just unbelievably painful, or where we've experienced loss that we don't know how to deal with it. And He talks to us about how to be able to navigate that. And He talks to us about how we make decisions in that, and how we stay strong in that, and how we can grow through that, and how good can come out of that. But then also there's a flip side to it. Because not only does He talk to us about how to be able to move through those difficult times in life, but then He also comes to us and says, but you also need to pay attention. Make sure that you pay attention not only to the difficult times in life, but you also need to pay attention to the good times in life. You also need to pay attention to how you handle success. Which for me is dead on. Because to be honest with you, it's not in the moments of loss that I struggle the most. It's not in the moments where everything's falling apart that I struggle the most, because most of the time when I find myself in those situations, I'm actually drawn to God. Because I know I need Him. I'm acutely aware of the fact that I need Him to step into my life and to do something. And so I find that in those moments where I'm struggling or there's great pain, that I often grow in my relationship with God. But on the flip side, in those moments of success, I find that I struggle more. And I think God knows this about us. And so He comes to us and He says, listen, I don't want to just talk about when things go wrong, but I want to take some time and just come in. Because I want to take some time to talk about, okay, how do you handle it when things go well? How do you handle it when you actually are successful? How do you handle it when all of a sudden your life explodes in just beauty and goodness, and all of a sudden you have more than you ever thought you would have, and things are just falling into place, right? This isn't my life right now because I've got little kids, and that doesn't ever happen when you have little kids, but they tell me it will happen eventually in my life again. But how do you handle that? How do you move through that? And he says you have to be careful with it, because if you're not careful with it, it can lead to something that's destructive. Now, let me give you an example of how this works in my life. Because usually the way that this works is that I'll step into success, or all of a sudden something that I've been working for is achieved, or a goal that I had becomes a reality, or something from in my life just goes really, really well. And the way that I usually handle that is this. I'll step into that success, and all of a sudden I'll begin to look at that success, and I'll say to myself, wow, look what I did. Man, that's pretty impressive. Look what I just did. And then other people will come talk to you about it. And they'll start saying, man, look what just happened. Wow. That's impressive. And you're thinking to yourself, yeah, it is. I'm kind of a big deal. And I start thinking this way. And I'm just telling you about my experience. I know you don't struggle with this, okay? It's just me, but I just want, in case you ever encounter this, ever in your life, I just want to give you a little bit of a heads up of how God tells us to walk through it. But I'll step into this, and all of a sudden, in some way, shape, or form, God blesses me, or things begin to go the way that I planned them. The very few times in life that happens, but I encounter this, and very subtly, I find it happens very, very subtly, very, very quickly. I often don't even notice it. I'll find myself in that position where I'm looking back and saying, man, I did pretty good. Look at me. And very subtly, all of a sudden this thing called pride begins to worm its way into me. And I begin to believe that I did that. And not only do I begin to believe that I did this, but then I also begin to believe that I can control what happens next. Because after all, I'm the one who did that. And so now, you just watch. Not only did I do that, but I'm going to do this too. It's really subtle. But all of a sudden, I begin to believe, you know what? I'm in control. I got this thing figured out. It's really subtle. And all of a sudden, pride becomes more and more a part of who I am. And God knows this. And so again, and I want to take you to a passage in Romans chapter 11 today where I see him doing this, where he comes in and says, okay, not only do you have to pay attention to when things go wrong, but listen. You have to pay attention when things go well. Because if you're not careful, it can turn into pride. And the Bible says all sorts of things about pride. I just want to take you to a couple different situations where God's talking about pride and just how unbelievably destructive it is, because he wants to make sure we understand. No, listen, when you find yourself in this place where you're beginning to believe, look at what I did, look at me, he says, it will destroy you. And so he says it over and over and over again. Proverbs 16, verse 18 says, pride goes before destruction and haughtiness before a fall. He says, you find yourself there, guess what? You're about to experience destruction. Proverbs 11, 2 says, pride leads to disgrace, but with humility comes wisdom. And then James 4, 6 is really just a powerful passage. He says, but he gives us even more grace to stand against such evil desires. As the scriptures say, God opposes the proud but favors the humble. God says, listen, I want you to understand something. When you find yourself in that place of pride, you need to know something. I am no longer fighting for you. I'm actually fighting against you. Because I know that pride leads to destruction. So I want you to know something. I'm going to do whatever it takes in your life to move you from pride to humility. So I'm actively working against you to help you change direction. But as we've been talking about in this series, God's not just interested in us understanding what is right and what's wrong. And I know some of you think that. Some of you think the whole Bible, all the scriptures is given so we can know what's right and what's wrong. God loves you far more than that. He doesn't just want you to know what's right and what's wrong. He wants you to be able to engage it in a way in which you can succeed. He wants for you to be able to not just know what the right decision is, but he wants to coach you through how you begin to do that. And for some of you, you're frustrated in this relationship with God because you think that God is just coming to you with what's right and what's wrong. You've been taught that your whole life. And so growing up in church or wherever you experience God from a family member, whatever it is, it was always just what's right and what's wrong. Here's what's right and you need to do it. Here's what's wrong. You need to stop doing it. But if you begin to look at the scriptures and if you begin to read through it, you'll see that in those moments where he's saying, listen, there's a way that leads to life and a way that leads to death. There's a right thing and a wrong thing. He doesn't just want you to know what it is, but he wants to coach you in how to be able to make the right decision. A coach doesn't come to a runner and just say, hey, listen, you need to run faster, run faster. Maybe your coach did. That's not a good coach, okay? A good coach doesn't go to an athlete and say, hey, listen, you need to jump higher, jump higher. No, what do? They come in and they say, okay, listen, we need to improve our time. So what are we going to do? Well, we're going to run this distance today and we're going to hit the weight room here and they begin to build things in activities, right? Drills, practices, all these things in order to prepare the runner to run faster. And God, as he steps into our lives, he doesn't just step in and say, here's what's right and here's what's wrong, do it. But one of the beautiful ways in which he loves us is that he comes in and he says, okay, I want to coach you through this. And we've seen that in our previous conversations. So he comes to us about controlling our tongue and the destructive nature of our tongue. He says, okay, we're gonna talk about making sure that we say things that edify, and there's all sorts of things that God tells us about that. He says, but here's where I want you to start. I want you to start by practicing being quiet. I want you to shut up. He comes to us and he's talking about this discontentment inside of us that can drive us to all these things. He says, here's what I want you to do. I want you to begin practicing being thankful. Consistently build it into your life that you practice thanking me for what I've given you. He says, it'll begin to change you. There are actions that he's calling us to. Consistent, habitual actions that he's calling us to, because he knows that when we begin to put these into practice, they will change our hearts and ultimately set us up to succeed when it matters most. And the same thing is true when it comes to this idea of pride. He doesn't just want you to know pride's wrong. No, no, no. He wants you to succeed. And so he comes to us and he says, okay, you need to understand that pride leads to destruction. But then he also comes to us, and I believe in the book of Romans, he comes to us and says, okay, now I'm going to begin to give you some things that you can put into practice in your life that will help move you in the right direction, that will move you away from pride. The passage I want to take you to is found in Romans chapter 11, but before we get there, I want to give you a little bit of background on this passage, because you have to understand he's doing this throughout the entire book of Romans. He's not just doing it in chapter 11 and chapter 12. Chapter 11 and chapter 12 are the culmination of an entire book. If you get the chance to be able to read through Romans this week, I highly, highly suggest that you do it. Again, it's another one of those books. You're going to be able to sit down with it. You can read through it all in one setting. You just be able to experience all of what we're going to be talking about. We don't have time to talk through all of the context of chapter 11, and so I encourage you, go back and read through it. Because as Paul begins the book of Romans, he's talking about this idea of pride. But he's not talking about it necessarily on an individual basis. He's talking about how it has affected humanity and how it has led to so much destruction within humanity. And so he starts off and he talks about how we're created and how God brings us into this and how our very being, the very reason we exist is because of him. And then he surrounds us with this beauty. But listen to what he says. It's just at the very beginning of the book, still in chapter 1, verse 21, it says, yes, they knew God, but they wouldn't worship him as God or even give him thanks. It says, and they began to think up foolish ideas of what God was like. He says, they we're brought into this world, and God gives us all this. And as we step into it, rather than giving him thanks, we begin to believe that we did this. And all of a sudden, we begin to move towards pride, and we're deciding who God is and what God looks like. And it says that they create their own gods. When you create a god, you know what you're saying? I'm God. Anyone who's creating a god says, I'm God. I get to decide what God is like, not him. He says, at the beginning of the story, God's the very one who brings us into this story. He creates us. He surrounds us with all this. He says, but they don't acknowledge him. They don't even give him thanks. They're like, no, this is about me. Look what I've done. And then throughout the first three chapters, he begins to break it down in different ways. And he begins to look at how it shows up in different aspects of life. And so he talks about those who have become proud because of their morality. And they believe that in some way, shape, or form, God should answer to them because they make the right choices and they're all proud of their self-righteousness. And then he talks about those who are proud because of their religion.
And they say, look what we've done and the religion that we've created and the rules that we follow, and, or those who are proud because of their race and because they're a part of the nation of Israel. And so now they're like, oh, look at me. God owes me because I'm a part of this nation. Look what I did. He's talking through all these different ways that pride has affected humanity. And all these different ways in which we've said, no, I am in control. God, I don't owe you. You owe me. Look what I did. And so for the first three chapters, he's working us through this and walking us through this. And then he gets to chapter four and he begins to change direction, because then he begins to break all that down. And he begins to point out how foolish it is and how ridiculous it is that we're taking credit for this, because the very reason that we exist is because of him. None of you brought yourself here. And one of the things that he exposes is that sometimes our pride is based on things that we've accomplished, but also sometimes our pride is based upon what we believe about ourselves. And so we're proud of the intellect that we have. But who amongst you actually decided or created your own intellect? And he begins to break this down and show how it's so utterly ridiculous that everything that we have is not because we did it, but the fact that every single thing that we have is by the grace of God. The very reason that we exist is because of the grace of God, and he decided to bring us into the story. The very reason that you have the body that you have and the intellect that you have is because of the grace of God. Even your ability to be able to make the right choice is because of the grace of God. And he begins to talk through how our very relationship with God is based on the grace of God because of Jesus Christ and what he did on that cross, how he gave his life for you. Even in the moment where we wanted nothing to do with him, and in our pride, he came and he gave his life for us. He says, your very relationship with God, your whole ability to be brought back with him is because of the grace of God. He says, you value your self-righteousness. He says, but it's worthless. But God wants to give you a righteousness that's actually valuable. But it's only by the grace of God. He says, it's all by grace. Look at it, guys. It's all by grace. It's all by grace. It's all because of grace. And all of it is leading up to the end of chapter 11. Because as he comes to the end of chapter 11, he finally comes to this moment where he just begins to celebrate God. And he calls us to this amazing reality. Let me read it to you. It's beginning in chapter 11, verse 33. It says this, it says, oh, how great are God's riches in wisdom and knowledge. How impossible it is for us to understand his decisions and his ways. For who can know the Lord's thoughts? Who knows enough to give him advice? And who has given him so much that he needs to pay it back? And then he comes, this is the culmination of this whole thing as he's working through it. He comes to this point in verse 36, for everything comes from him and exists by his power, and is intended for his glory. All glory to him forever. Amen. He says, guys, look, pay attention. You keep thinking, you keep looking at it and say, look what I did. He says, no. All of it is because of grace. Everything we have, every single thing we have is because of grace. It's all from him. And he's already beginning to coach us. He's exposed us to the destruction of pride. He's exposed us to the beauty of God, and then he steps in and says, okay, so you have to change the way you think when you step into those moments, because it's got to move from, wow, look what I did, to, wow, look what God's done. He says, you have to change the way you think about this. He even says that a couple of verses later. Beginning in chapter 12, it says, "And so, dear brothers and sisters, I plead with you to give your bodies to God because of all he has done for you. Let them be a living and holy sacrifice, the kind he will find acceptable." And he says, so here's what you do. When you realize all of this is for God, you don't move to pride and say, "Look what I did," and begin to serve yourself. He says, no. When you realize all this is from God, he says, all of a sudden you begin to move to humility and realize, "Oh my goodness, I can't believe he gave this to me." So you say, "God, how can I serve you?" When you move to pride, you have to serve yourself. Why? Because you're the one who did it, and you're the one who has to make sure it happens again. You have to serve yourself. But when you realize that God did this, that it's all from him, and it changes everything, because now I just serve you. You take care of me. I just serve you. I just want to give myself to you. And so he says, you have to change the way that you think. He says, don't copy the behavior and customs of this world. He says, but let God transform you into a new person by changing the way you think. Then you will learn to know God's will for you, which is good and pleasing and perfect. Because of the privilege and authority God has given me, I give each of you this warning. Listen, and in case you're wondering whether or not he's talking about this, listen to what he says. He says, I give each of you this warning. Don't think you are better than you really are. Be honest in your evaluation of yourselves, measuring yourselves by the faith God has given each of us. Now, let me pause there for a second, because sometimes I hear people take this verse and they talk about it on its own. And they say, okay, and if you take it out of the context and you hear this verse, listen, you just need to think of yourself honestly. It can be really easy to believe that what he's saying is you just need to be really honest about your gifts and talents and skills, which some of you are here and you're like, I am honest. I'm amazing. Okay, like I have some phenomenal gifts and talents and skills. Just ask anyone. And if you take the passage out of the book, it can be easy to think that. But when you look at it in the book, you realize the whole book, he's been saying this: you're nothing, God's everything. You're nothing, God's everything. You have nothing to offer. God has everything to offer, and he wants to give it to you. And then even when he comes to this point, he says, think of your, basically what he's saying, in light of everything I've just told you about yourself, think of yourself honestly. Which means that you come to this point, you say, it's all from him. Me honestly thinking of myself is, it's all from him. And I love how he says it. He says, and measure yourself by the faith that God has given you. Not measure yourself by your faith. Like, wow, look, man, I've got some serious faith. Says, no. Even your faith was given to you by God. And so he says, just measure yourself by the faith that God has given you. And again, calling us back to this reality. Listen, no. When you step into that, and the beauty that God's going to pour into your life and my life, and the truth is, it doesn't matter where you are on this journey, you are drowning in the goodness of God. I know sometimes we're in the midst of struggles, and it's hard to see around those struggles, to see all the beauty that God's given us. But if you take the time to sit down and walk through everything that God's poured into your life, we are drowning in the goodness of God. And God's coming to us to say, listen, kids, pay attention, because it's really easy when you're in those moments to begin to believe that this is about you. To begin to believe that you did this. He says, so transform your minds. Change the way that you think. He says, no. Don't think of yourself as better than you are. Think honestly of yourself and understand it's all from him. It's all from him. He says, and so don't fall into this trap of believing it's from you, where you start to serve you and your plan and your agenda, because you're going to make this happen. He says, no. It all came from him. He's the one who did it in the first place. So you just serve others. You serve him. And then he begins to walk us through some practical ways that we can put this into practice. Because again, he's not just trying to teach us this big idea. He wants for us to be successful in implementation. And so therefore, as he continues, he begins to call us into what that looks like. Beginning in verse 3, he begins to talk about what it means to serve the people around us. And there's a couple things that he gives us. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on the first one because we talk about the first one a lot here at Hoboken Grace, because he says, here's what I want you to do. In order to make sure that you keep moving in this direction, I want you to give of yourself in service to the people around you who are part of the body of Christ. I want you to serve this mission. He says, I want you to give everything that you have to that. I want you to give the best of who you are to that. I want you to do it with all your heart. And again, we're not going to talk about it a lot. If you want to know more or learn more about what that means, we have a whole conversation called Gifted. It's online. You can watch all of it. We talk through this passage in Romans 12 and what it means to not just serve, but to serve with the best of who we are. He says, the first thing I want you to do is I want you to begin serving this way and use your talents and gifts towards this thing that is going to accomplish my mission and not your mission. Why? Because it's going to remind you. It all comes from Him. It's going to call you back to this. It's going to move you towards humility. Humility is not when you think less of yourself, okay? It's not. Humility is not when that in some way, shape, or form you think less of yourself. Humility is when you understand that, listen, I didn't do this. He did. Humility in your life is when you finally come to the point where you look around and you realize, I owe it all to Him. It has a lot less to do with how you think of yourself and a lot more to do with how you think of Him. You understand? No, it's all from Him. And so the first thing, you give yourself in service. And he walks through that for several verses of what that looks like, and he's calling us to that. But he doesn't stop there. So I want to pick up in verse 9, chapter 12. He says, don't just pretend to love others. Really love them. Hate what is wrong. Hold tightly to what is good. Love each other with genuine affection. And then he comes to the next one. And this one is, man, this one's beautiful and difficult all at the same time. He says, here's what I want you to do. I want you to give of your life in service to others. He says, here's the other thing I want you to do. I want you to really love people. That's pretty generic. What does that look like? He says, I want you to hate what is wrong. I want you to hold what is good. I want you to love each other. He goes back to it again. I want you to love each other with genuine affection. What does that look like? Here's what I want you to practice. Honor each other. But he doesn't just say honor each other. He says, here's what I want you to do. I want you to take delight in honoring each other. In other words, I want you to begin to move through life, and if you believe that you did this, you move through life trying to figure out how to honor yourself. You want to make sure that people recognize the beauty of what you just did and just how amazing it is, and you're constantly working. I want to honor myself. I got to make sure that the future is as good as the past, and so I got to make sure that people realize how good I am, and you got to make sure people realize what I can do. Most of us spend our entire week at work trying to figure out how to do that, because our promotion system is all based upon self-honoring and trying in some way, shape, or form to make ourselves look good so that we can get promoted and we can move up the ladder and we can succeed. He says, okay, guys, wait. It's going to be different with you. Here's the thing. Here's what I want you to do. You step into that success. I don't want you to live like they live. I don't want you to work to honor yourself. He says, no. You give of yourself to others, and then you begin to look forward to opportunities to honor them. You don't worry about making much of you. No. It's not about you. It's all because of Him anyway. He says, no. You honor each other. And we're not just talking about recognition, because recognition is easy. Recognition is, hey, you did a good job. I go up to you and tell you I did a good job. Hey, you know, good job. That was cool. Honor's different than recognition, because honor has a community aspect to it. It requires other people. In other words, you need to celebrate someone in front of other people. You need to make much of someone in front of other people. Because I want you to begin to delight in this, to live for this, to look forward to it. Like, man, when's the next chance I get to honor someone else? Now, I'm not going to ask you to raise your hands, okay? But how many of you walked through this last week thinking to yourself, who's someone I can honor? Who's someone is there anyone around me that I could just really make much of? Like, I just want to celebrate someone around me. The reason I'm not going to ask you to raise your hands is because I'm not sure there would be very many, if any, hands raised. We don't live that way. We don't think that way. It's so countercultural. But God says, no, here's the practice. Here's the practice. Here's the practice. And he gives us several of them, but I want to hone in on this one. Okay? Here's the practice. Honor each other. What does that look like? And this isn't the only time in the New Testament where God gives us this practice. He talks about it several times, this idea of honoring each other. What in the world does that look like? We're in our speaking team meeting and we're talking through this past week, and they asked me, they said, well, what does that look like? And I'll be honest with you, I'll tell you exactly what I told them. I said, guys, I have no idea because I'm terrible at this. I'm just being honest with you, I am really, really bad at this because I don't naturally think this way. And to be honest with you, it's hard. Because someone who truly delights in honoring others is someone who has moved to humility. You see, they understand. I don't need to honor myself. God takes care of me. So they understand that they get to live for others because they don't need to watch their back. God watches their back. Everything I have comes from him anyway. I didn't create this or do this anyway, so why do I need to work to honor myself when I can enjoy honoring you? And you. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to begin to take delight in honoring others. And you see what happens to your heart. When at work, and I'm going to choose the hardest place for you to do it, because work is the hardest place for you to do it. Do you see what happens? When rather than trying to highlight how valuable you are to the company, you start living to highlight how valuable those around you are to the company. You know what has to happen in order for you to start doing that? You have to really believe it's all from him. You have to really believe it. And this is one of those practices. This is one of those practices that calls us to true faith. True faith. And remember what we talked about a couple weeks ago. Faith is not when you move forward without doubt. Okay? Faith is when you act based on something being true. When you act as if something is true. So he says, here's what I want you to do. Honor those around you. Stop worrying about honoring yourself. Honor those around you. Act like it's true that everything comes from me. And you see. You see what happens in your heart. You see, he doesn't just want us to know what's right and what's wrong. He wants to coach us. So he steps in and says, kids. I know it doesn't come natural. But rather than honoring yourself, honor them. And you watch what happens. There's a story that Jesus tells in Luke chapter 14. He's talking to his followers and he says this. He says, when you're invited to a wedding feast, don't sit in the seat of honor. What if someone who is more distinguished than you has also been invited? The host will come and say, give this person your seat. Then you will be embarrassed and you will have to take whatever seat is left at the foot of the table. Instead, take the lowest place at the foot of the table. Then when your host sees you, he will come and say, friend, we have a better place for you. Then you will be honored in front of all the other guests. For those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. Jesus says, listen, trust me. Trust me. I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to take care of you. You stop worrying about honoring you. And then in Romans, he comes in and says, honor them. So honor them. My challenge to you this week is to find one person. One person who you are convinced will not honor you back. Right? Because we're not talking about honoring people so we can be honored back. That's fun. Right? Here's the deal. I'll throw a party for you and you throw a party for me. Okay? And I'll talk about how great you are and you talk about how great I am. That's easy. I want you to find someone. I want you to find someone who wouldn't expect it. Someone who's not going to honor you back. But I want you to honor them. For extra credit, do it at work. Seriously. That's your mission field. You want to display Christ? You go in there and start making much of them, even though it might cost you your promotion. And you see, if they don't begin to ask you questions about what you believe about how the world works, find one person, and you begin to honor them. And let's see. And you're going to have to experiment with it because I can't tell you exactly what it looks like. But let's have fun with it. Let's take delight in it. One person. I'm just going to figure out some crazy way to make much of this person. Because after all, everything I have comes from him. And I trust him that as he's coaching me, he's preparing me to live and love well. Will you pray with me? Father, as we come to this challenge that you have for us in the midst of this passage, to honor one another, Father, I pray that while we may not know exactly what it looks like or how to be able to live this consistently in our lives, I pray that we would begin to realize the beauty of what you're calling us to. And just the truth behind it, that we don't have to worry about honoring ourselves, that you're the one who took care of us to this point, and you're the one who's going to take care of us moving forward, that we don't have to watch our backs, that you have our back. That we can begin to experience the freedom of not trying to create and manipulate the future, but the freedom of just loving in the midst of the present. Father, I pray that we would move into this week with expectation. Of how we might be able to follow you. How we might be able to take one more step at what it means to truly demonstrate you to the world around us. And Father, I pray that as we honor those around us, that you would be honored. And that the one who deserves the glory, the one who deserves to be made much of, would be. Because you deserve all the glory. All we have is because of you. In Jesus' name. Amen.